humanitarian mission, a non-violent mission that is now supported and protected by the Navy that has been provided, particularly from Italy, Spain, and yesterday we had the Turkish naval ships come on as well, providing the much needed humanitarian aid. And we continue to call on governments to do their work. If governments remain silent, we the people will not.
I wanted to ask you also, during the UN General Assembly, Colombian President Gustavo Petro, when he was in New York, called for an international force to stop Israel's genocide in Gaza. As a legislator in South Africa, would you support your government's joining such an international force or propose it?
Well, we must first understand that the self-defense and self-determination for the Palestinians is enshrined in international law. And in this regard, as governments across the globe begin recognizing Palestine as a sovereign state, they should also protect the rights of that sovereignty. In this regard, the president of Colombia is within international law to ensure that a peacekeeping mission is deployed in Gaza to end the genocide and the systematic ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians. So we do continue as a civil society to exert pressure on our representatives in parliaments to ensure that their governments are able to have an arms embargo against the apartheid state of Israel. But more importantly, what will effectively ensure that the genocide is brought to an end is to deploy a military intervention so that we can be able to bring about everlasting peace in Gaza.
Nkosi Zwelivelile Mandela Mandela, grandson of Nelson Mandela, speaking to us from the Mediterranean Sea, part of the Global Samud Flotilla, a former member of the South African Parliament. And Diana Buthu, 30 seconds on your response to the significance of this flotilla and how much attention it's getting where you are in occupied West Bank, Ramallah, not to mention Gaza.
The significance of it is huge because for the first time, we're seeing that mainstream media is now starting to follow this flotilla. But beyond that, it's actually lifting up the spirits of those in Gaza who have seen and feel that the world has abandoned them. And now we see that there are some nearly 50 ships, people who are from around the world are saying and challenging this siege and saying that the people of Gaza are not forgotten. This blockade will be challenged and that they are standing in solidarity with everybody from Gaza. We're seeing messages from the people of Gaza welcoming this Samud flotilla. And so the significance of it cannot be overstated.
Diana Buthu, Palestinian human rights attorney, former advisor to the negotiating team of the Palestine Liberation Organization, speaking to us from Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. When we come back, the U.S. government appears to be headed to a shutdown tonight. Stay with us.
It's Christmas time in Washington. Democrats rehearse. Getting in gear for four more years. Things not getting worse. Republicans drink whiskey neat and thank their lucky stars. They say cannot seek another term. There'll be no more FDRs. I say home in Tennessee. An uneasy feeling in my chest, wondering what it means. So come back.
Steve Earle, performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. The U.S. government appears to be headed to a shutdown at midnight after President Trump and Democratic leaders failed to reach an agreement Monday on a spending bill. Vice President J.D. Vance spoke to reporters after the White House meeting.
I think we're headed to a shutdown because the Democrats won't do the right thing. I hope they change their mind.
Democrats are looking to extend subsidies for the Affordable Care Act and reverse cuts to Medicaid and other health care programs that were implemented by the tax and spending bill passed earlier this year. Here's House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries.
They're telling the American people what they're all about. Largest cut to Medicaid in American history. Ripping food from the mouths of hungry children, hungry seniors, and hungry veterans. And they did all of that to reward their billionaire donors with massive tax breaks. That's what Republicans have been all about in terms of governing this year. And we're not down with any of that.
For more, we're joined by David Dayan, executive editor of the American Prospect. His new piece, The Government's Been Shut Down for Months. David, welcome back to Democracy Now! If you can just explain what's going down right now and if you think the shutdown will happen at midnight and what it all means.
I mean, it seems pretty clear that the shutdown is going to happen at midnight. And we've had a situation in the last several months where hundreds of billions of dollars has been withheld from thousands of programs all over the country. About 12% of the federal workforce has been fired. The president is all too happy to fund programs he likes and defund programs he doesn't like. And that's the textbook definition of a government shutdown. And we've been in that state since the inauguration, practically. And now we're just going to admit it.
And David, what about the possibility that the Trump administration has held out that if there is a shutdown, it will proceed then to lay off permanently more federal workers?
This is laughable. I mean, they've already laid off a number of federal workers. They've attempted reductions in force all across the federal government. Federal courts have said they have no legitimacy or legality to do that. That's just as true in a government shutdown as it is not in a government shutdown. The lifeline of the Supreme Court allowing them to move forward with some of these plans would still be in evidence, so it's hard to say what's legal or legitimate at all in this country anymore. But there's no additional authority to do mass layoffs that is conferred by a government shutdown. If Russ Vought wants to fire a bunch of people, he's probably going to do it. And he's just using the shutdown as a fig leaf in an attempt to intimidate Democrats to following through on Republican demands.
David, can you explain what the Democrats are asking for when it comes to the Obamacare and also reversing Medicaid cuts? How many millions of Americans are going to experience the loss of insurance and health care or the reduction of it or it being increased in cost?
Yeah, it's a lot. They want to extend subsidies that were enhanced originally under the American Rescue Plan for the Affordable Care Act exchanges. If those aren't those expire at the end of the year, and if they are not moved forward, you'll see an increase in premiums of about 75% at least on average. You're talking about probably 4 million people losing their health insurance coverage. The Medicaid cuts would be another something like 10 million people who would be losing their coverage. So it's a big deal. The other part that Democrats are asking for is the idea that if they pass a budget resolution, that everything in that resolution actually gets spent. It's folly to continue to make a deal with someone that tells you they're not going to honor the deal. And that is what has been happening with respect to Donald Trump over the last several months. And so there are some safeguards in place in the Democratic counteroffer to say you can't rescind spending that we appropriate. You can't impound spending that the government has said is supposed to be spent.
Well, given those Democratic demands, we've had so many of these budget shutdown crises in the past. Mm-hmm. How do you see this being resolved? What would be the makings of an agreement that would be able to come out? And how long do you think this might last?
Well, it's probably going to be protracted. The last time there was a shutdown when Donald Trump was the president, it lasted 35 days. That was the longest shutdown in American history. I see no reason why this wouldn't go at least to those lengths. The two sides seem to be very far apart. Republicans just want to sort of pound Democrats into submission on this and offer them really nothing, while Democrats are asking to prevent the loss of health care for 15 million people and an actual honoring of whatever budget agreement is made. So it's hard to see where we go from here. Typically, you see that in shutdowns, the party that's asking for something usually doesn't get it, frankly. However, polling has shown that Republicans are being blamed for this shutdown, and that's also been true throughout history, whether Republicans were in charge of the presidency or not. So it's a bit unclear to me how the politics are going to play out, but I think what's clear is that we're now in a position where people are paying attention to the real crisis that has been going on with government funding over the last several months, and hopefully people will understand who is responsible for that.
Finally, David Dayan, as we speak, hundreds of admirals and generals have been called in from all over the world for this unprecedented, what some are calling a MAGA rally at Quantico, called by Defense Secretary Hegseth, that now apparently Trump is going to address. I don't know if they got round-trip tickets, but if they didn't, will they be able to go back home, number one? But most importantly, we're moving into a segment now on ICE and the federalizing National Guard. Will this mean that ICE gets less money, that Trump will not be able to use them as freely, these agents, to move into cities?
No, the way that shutdowns work is so-called essential personnel are allowed to continue with their job, whether they're paid or not. Then they get back pay when the shutdown is resolved. So the president has some latitude to allow essential work to continue to be performed. And obviously, this president is going to say that the continued abduction of people from American streets is essential. So I don't see any let up there or with the Department of Defense, quite frankly, which is using the money that they got in the reconciliation agreement as a kind of slush fund. There was $150 billion of a top off, and that money is likely to be used to cover whatever expenses are needed during the shutdown.
David Dayan, want to thank you for being with us, executive editor of The American Prospect. We'll link to your piece. The government has been shut down for months. Next up, to President Trump's threat to send federal troops to Portland, Oregon, and his request for 100 troops to be deployed to Chicago amidst a widening immigration crackdown. Back in 20 seconds.
Living is easy with eyes closed, misunderstanding all we see. It's getting hard to be someone, but it all works out. It doesn't matter much to me. Déjame llevarte hacia donde voy. Strawberry fields. Nada es real. Y nada hay algo que pensar. Campos de fresa por siempre.
A Santa Cecilia performing a rendition of Strawberry Fields Forever in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman here in New York with Juan Gonzalez in Chicago as we turn to Oregon and Chicago. In Oregon, President Trump has ordered the deployment of 200 members of the Oregon National Guard. Trump wrote on social media the troops are necessary to, quote, protect war-ravaged Portland and any of our ICE facilities under siege from attack by Antifa and other domestic terrorists, the president said. He went on, I am also authorizing full force if necessary, unquote. Oregon Governor Tina Kotek denounced Trump's move.
There is no insurrection. There is no threat to national security, and there is no need for military troops in our major city. We do not need or want federal troops in Oregon stoking fear, creating conflict, and frankly, escalating a situation that is under control. Any federal takeover with military troops in our state is a threat to communities across Oregon.
Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield and the city of Portland have filed a temporary restraining order against Trump's move to send in troops. For more, we're joined in Portland by Sandy Chung, executive director of the ACLU of Oregon. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Sandy. Explain what's taking place at this moment. Talk about the troops and Oregon's response.
Thank you, Amy. Good morning. Currently, troops are not in Portland or in Oregon. And on behalf of Oregonians, I want to be very clear. Before troops arrive, President Trump, we do not need and we do not want federal troops on the streets of Portland or in any other city or town in Oregon. If the president does proceed with sending in the military, he will be abusing his presidential powers. He will be disrespecting and misusing our military and service members, and he will be wasting valuable taxpayer dollars. There is nothing going on right now in Portland or any part of Oregon that requires him to send in the federal military, especially after our governor and our local elected leaders, including Mayor Wilson of Portland, Oregon, has objected and said there's nothing here that requires federal troops.
And Sandy, I wanted to ask you this. This president has routinely lied and misrepresented reality to justify these extreme actions of the federal government. What is your sense of how many organizations in the media are reporting these allegations of the president?
Yes, what I can tell you is the president seems to be focusing on the ICE office, which is in a part of downtown Portland. It's a couple miles from our offices. I was actually there on Sunday. On Sunday, there were a couple rallies in Portland by everyday people who came out to say, President Trump, please do not send in the military because we do not want it and we do not need it. What I can tell you is there have been some protesters outside the ICE office. Those protests have been overwhelmingly peaceful. And there have been images of protests going around, including from 2020, but also from now that do not accurately reflect what's going on. Oftentimes, the images that people across the country are seeing and potentially the president's seeing do not provide the full context. They do not show the calm situation outside the office where during weekdays, people are volunteers are outside the ICE office providing Know Your Rights information to immigrants and refugees who have appointments at the office. They don't show the members of the clergy of many different faiths and backgrounds who are there raising their voices against injustice. These images oftentimes also don't show the full context of federal officers at the ICE building oftentimes coming out without any apparent reason to physically attack protesters, to use pepper spray against them, and to tear gas them. And in fact, even Portland police officers have stated on the record that they have seen federal officers at the ICE building coming out with no apparent reason to attack protesters.
week, President Trump told reporters in the White House on television that on television he'd watch, quote, paid terrorists destroy the city of Portland. This is what he said.
They're walking in throwing smoke bombs into stores. These are paid terrorists, okay? These are paid agitators. These are professional. I watched that last night. I'm very good at this stuff. These are paid agitators. They get paid money by radical left groups, not radical right groups, radical left groups. And they get paid a lot of money.
Sandy Chung, executive director of the ACLU of Oregon, please respond.
Well, Amy, I want to point out that a couple of days ago, President Trump told the media that he had spoken to our governor, Governor Kotek, and said he actually was a little bit confused and was questioning whether some of the images that he had seen accurately reflects what's going on in Portland. And so there is a question about whether President Trump's staff is actually giving him accurate information and images of what is going on. But I can reassure the president and people across America that right now there's nothing going on at the ICE building that requires federal troops to be sent in. The protests have been overwhelmingly peaceful. It has generally been small numbers of people. And people have been at the ICE office because they have been justifiably upset by the cruel, chaotic, and unjust actions of ICE. ICE has taken our neighbors, who are beloved family members, who are cared for coworkers, respected business members. ICE has even detained an Oregonian who was a firefighter and was literally in the midst of fighting a forest fire. So there are everyday people who have protested outside the ICE building to tell the president, we strongly disagree with ICE detentions in Oregon and across the United States. Please change course.
Sandy Chung, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Executive Director of the ACLU of Oregon, speaking to us from Portland. We end today's show in Chicago, where Trump's Border Patrol chief, Gregory Vovino, joined Border Patrol agents in tactical gear who roamed downtown streets and rode boats in the Chicago River. On Monday, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker condemned ICE's violent attacks and confirmed the so-called Department of War was seeking the deployment of 100 military troops to Illinois.
60% of the individuals that ICE has taken in Illinois this year have no criminal convictions of any kind. ICE is running around the loop harassing people for not being white. Just a year ago, that was illegal in the United States. Now, ICE is making it commonplace.
For more, we're joined in Chicago by Cristobal Cavazos, longtime community activist who's been volunteering with People's Patrols of ICE. He's co-founder of Immigrant Solidarity DuPage and Casa DuPage Worker Center. Welcome to Democracy Now! Cristobal, explain what's taking place and how you are organizing, what these People's Patrols of ICE are.
Good morning, Amy. It's really a pleasure to be here. So we're seeing a historic onslaught in Chicago, the killing of Silverio Villegas Gonzalez. We're seeing it at Broadview Detention Center. Friends of mine who've been tear gassed, people being thrown like pancakes, ICE in the loop, ICE going down the Chicago River on boats. It's really an attack on Chicago. They're trying to break our spirit. It was noted a few months ago by Tom Homan that, you know, Chicago, your rights and your rights and your rights. And it's true. We've been in Chicago, organizations like Casa DuPage, educating people, doing workshops, doing community control patrols, doing rapid response. So Chicago has been, you know, we're the city of big shoulders, but we're showing we're the city of a big struggle, too. The People's Patrol, we have people all over Chicagoland, that it's been a really beautiful mobilization. How can I help? You know, what can I do right now in the face of ICE? What can I do with the attacks? Cities like Elgin, Illinois, that our dear brothers and sisters have been attacked almost every single day. And we are really mobilizing people. There are men, women, people from the Anglo community, African-American community, Asian brothers and sisters coming out and giving half an hour, an hour every single day, patrolling our neighborhoods, giving out Know Your Rights cards, talking to people in Mexican stores, Mexican lavanderia. You know, Chicago's a very Mexican town. Making these contacts, but at the same time creating these networks of protection, these networks of resistance. And in the face of ICE, you know, we have ICE in places like Elgin and Joliet and Aurora, but being chased by three or four cars. I ran into ICE 2 weeks ago. Three of our protesters protesting ICE, shouting at them, ICE left. They don't like this. And now I don't think it's a coincidence. They're trying to send in 100 federal troops to protect ICE. But I think, you know, we're having a historic attack right now, as we see, but there's also historic fight back.
And Cristobal, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned you're in DuPage County, but the vast majority of the Latino and immigrant population of Chicagoland is not in the city. It's in places like you mentioned, Aurora, Waukegan, Elgin, Cicero. These are all majority Latino cities. What has been the nature of the organizing in these areas outside of Chicago?
Yeah, that's exactly right, hermano. It's good to hear your voice, Juan. Yeah, you know, Chicago, a lot of people forget Chicago. We're right up there in food production, beverage production, and it's our people that you know, my parents were migrant workers. The food in Chicago, the beverages in Chicago. So a lot of that production is in places like Elgin, Bartlett, Elk Grove Village, Illinois. So we have a lot of workers. Ironically, workers that, you know, 5 years ago, essential workers, you know, factories giving them lauding them and thanking them. And now these so-called essential workers are illegal workers. So it really makes no sense. So we're trying to go in there in these factories, putting safety committees, you know, having a sticker on the door that ICE cannot come in without a judicial warrant, as we're seeing in Chicago. They rarely have judicial warrants. That's why they're trying to do this war of terror, you know, going out there and going on Michigan Avenue and trying to freak people out and instill this paranoia. But we as organizers, you know, we're trying to keep that strength. We're trying to keep that solidarity. So we're doing factory committees for safety. We're patrolling outside of these factories. West Chicago, which is a town that's close to where we organize, people are actually doing patrols where they stand outside apartment buildings. They'll be there for hours every day until midnight, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, patrolling these apartment buildings. And if ICE is there, immediately intervening, immediately getting, doing a protest, letting people know. So we're really doing some historic mobilization here in Chicago, and we're super proud, but we know we're in the thick of it right now. The key word here is resistance.
And we only have about less than a minute left, but the Trump's threats to send the federal troops to Chicago, he's continued to back down and back down. Now he's talking about 100 troops. What is your sense of how Chicago would respond if federal troops are sent in?
Yeah, I think, you know, Trump has really done a propaganda war. He's just trying to freak us out. 100 troops, I mean, there are, you know, 3 million people in Chicago. There are hundreds of thousands of people in the Latino community. So he's trying to scare us. He's trying to build a lot of fear in the community just to stop us from fighting back. But, you know, frankly, it's not going to work. We're going to go out there. I know he's sending these troops because, you know, we routinely in Chicago have ICE agents surrounded by protesters. We're shouting them out. We're calling them out. We have Congress people, aldermen in Chicago that are standing up to ICE. So he's going to send in these troops. But I think as all of the attacks in Chicago have done, it's had an opposite effect, and that it's stimulating the movement. It's stimulating. There's going to be a protest today at 5 at Trump Tower. And we're not going to back down.
Cristobal Cavazos, want to thank you for being with us. People's Patrol volunteer in Chicago. Thank you very much for being there. Tomorrow we'll speak with Chicago's mayor. Coming up this weekend, I'll be speaking Saturday, October 4th at the Roxy Theater in San Francisco, doing the Q&A after the JFI special documentary screening of Steal the Story, Please, a new documentary about Democracy Now. That's at 4 o'clock on Saturday. And on Sunday, I'll be at BAMFA in Berkeley for another screening and Q&A. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is Mac DeMarco, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby, the Chablis.
Mm-hmm. With 1.5 million Canadians identifying as blind or having low vision, what will the future look like as we move to a world where using our eyes for screen time is at an all-time high? The BC Yukon Division of the Canadian Council of the Blind, or CCB, is a group run by the blind for the blind, where sports and recreation, technology training, and peer support are just a few of what they offer. To find out more, visit ccbbcyukon.com.